Hello and welcome back to another episode of Table Talk. In case you've forgotten, this is the podcast where we try and take any topic and connect it back to the Christian faith. And we're doing that for the curious, for people kind of looking in, wondering about what Christianity is all about. And on this episode, she's back. We've got the crazy dog lady. Crazy, but raising resilient kids has been Table Talk's all-time third most downloaded episode, which out of 55 isn't bad going. So we don't want to make you too big-headed, Claire Luther, but we are super grateful that you've given up some more time to join us back in the Table Talk studio.
Well, what a joy. What a lovely time it was chatting with you guys and kind of helping people understand to attempt or to encourage people to raise resilient kids. So here we go, talking on different topics.
Talking on different topic. One maybe closer to your heart or as close?
My goodness. I mean, I'm excited. I mean, where do we even start? You know that my heart beats with this topic.
Okay. We're here to talk about dogs, people. Dogs. Not just pets, just dogs. For a full episode. Graham, why don't you start us off? Just ease us into this topic, please.
Okay, so to ease us in, we have got a BBC quiz. Which dog are you? So Claire, I thought we could kick off by going through these questions and we'll find out which breed of fluffy pup would you be if you were a dog? That's the quote here. So are you up for that?
Let me warm up. I'm getting myself ready.
Okay, all right. So first, okay, wasn't expecting this as a first question. What's your favorite type of book? Is it comedy, detective, adventure, or sci-fi?
Oh, gosh, I haven't got my kind of romance in there. I'll go for adventure.
Okay. And your worst quality, is it being lazy, being restless, being loud, or being messy?
Definitely being too loud.
Okay, a perfect podcast guest.
Oh, gosh.
What would your friends say is your best quality? Is it being fun, being clever, being fearless, or being thoughtful?
Ooh. I'm going to say being thoughtful.
Very nice. This is question 4 of 5, almost there. What type of weather do you prefer? Hot, sunny days or cool, frosty days?
Ooh, definitely. Give me a bit of sunshine.
Okay. Yes. And then last question, how active are you? I can't sit still. I like to have a run around, but I also press snooze a couple of times or just just sleeping, just snoozing the whole time.
Okay, definitely not that third option. I'm torn between restless because I don't want that to come across as negative. I just love being with people and being busy. But then I do need with my grand old middle age a bit of Zed time. So I'm going to go for the middle one.
Okay, perfect.
Should we do a drum roll?
Oh, please. Drum roll, what please.
Okay, so Claire Luther, according to the very scientific BBC Which Dog Are You quiz, you are a Staffordshire Bull Terrier. How's that sitting with you?
Well, all I can say is right. Well done, them. Mm. I would have no idea how to judge that character, but I'm assuming it's very scientifically done.
It must be. I mean, I can only imagine. If it's the BBC, it must be, right?
Shall I give – actually – I'm not a Dachshund, but anyway.
So a little bit of context that it shares here. You're everyone's best friend. You're fun to be around and you never tire of playing, but that also means that you get bored a little too easily.
Is that true?
I'll take that. I mean, that's not offensive in any way. I think that's quite a nice little sum up.
Great. But perfect. All
there
right.
There needs to be a question on, like, are you quite good looking?
No. No, we don't need to be. We don't need to be focusing on looks. Character is the issue.
Okay. Mm. Fine. Okay. Cool. Right. So Staffordshire Bull Terrier, you are.
There I am. Thanks, Biebs.
Yeah. Great.
Okay, let's do some dog history, because I think everyone likes talking about dog history. Claire, what dog did you have growing up?
I had a golden retriever, and yes. I don't remember being without a dog, but I do remember always having this fluffy companion in our lives that would be ever present on anything we did. And it was kind of a lot of our activity stuff growing up, our family time was taking the dog for a walk or having cuddles with the dog or watching TV with the dog.
What was he or she called?
Woofer.
Shut up.
Wow. Brilliant.
That's true not fact. A proper name. That's
true fact.
Woofer.
And he was so... he was so loyal. And I remember when my sister was born, he just sat by the pram. He was just the most amazing dog. Then when he passed, my parents got another golden retriever. And then they wanted, he was very loyal and loving too, but they wanted another dog to go with him that was a bit more bouncy. And so we got Flatcoat. So we ended up having two the second time around.
Wow. And what were their names?
Sam and... Classic. Come on, Claire, don't panic. Oh, yes, Oscar.
Oscar.
Anyway, Oscar. Yes, that's... Stop it. But yeah, so I have had dogs all of my time living at home.
Oh, I love a golden retriever.
Absolutely classic, yeah. Well, so we got a dog quite recently, and ours is a miniature golden doodle. So I think like one third golden retriever, two thirds miniature poodle. And yeah, I think the golden retriever element is very sweet. They're just very cuddly and loving. It's an absolutely classic dog. I feel like when you see a golden retriever, you just smile and you want to go up and like grab its ears.
My grandparents had a dachshund as well. So we also had a long haired, kind of red coated dachshund that was part of our lives, called Trinker. So we had the big dog at home and then the tiny dog. The lap dog that was always licking my grandpa's fingers. It was, it was a bit difficult. We always used to go around for tea and Gramps, he was like, oh, kids, you know, come on, let's have a bicky. And he put up Trinker on the lap and then he would let her lick his fingers and then go into the biscuit tin and pass us a biscuit and didn't even think twice that was a bit, anyway, yeah, that's my one of my memories. Just thinking, I've got to eat that biscuit.
Do you know what? Being a dog owner has transformed that part for me as well. Because, like, you know, when you don't own a dog and you just are around a dog and you see people sort of letting them lick their face and sort of having, you know, like doing kisses with the dog and the dog's like licking their mouth, and you're like, oh, you know, that's quite sweet. And then you own a dog and you see what a dog sort of does with its mouth, and you're like, okay, shouldn't be a thing. Yeah, no, not for me. So yeah, those biscuits, a bit scarring.
It was a tough call.
Right, second question on your dog history, Claire. What is your happiest and saddest dog moment?
My happiest dog moment was picking up our own dog, getting her in 2014. She's a smooth-haired dachshund, black and tan. And my saddest dog moment was putting our dog Sam, our family dog, to sleep on holiday, and our partners at the time having to take the other dog out for a walk, and realizing that by putting him down without the other one seeing was the biggest mistake we'd made.
Really?
Yeah. He howled and cried for 10 months after that, sitting at the front door waiting for Sam to come back.
That is,
and then he died.
Goodness.
I know, gosh, I'm feeling a bit emotional talking about it.
Oh,
but the vet was so kind. So all of our family were able to be with Sam when he was put down. And so my mum held him. And gee whiz, come on, Claire, get a grip. And yeah, that was my saddest moment.
That
it was
so
the night
sad.
Before as well, knowing that he was going to be put down. Just that horrible foreboding and waiting that this was it. It wasn't very easy.
Gosh, that is so sad. Yeah, and I have to say, that is also a part of it that I was not prepared for, is just the level of bond that you have with the dog. You sort of think it's just, oh, it's going to be a pet, it'll run around and it'll sort of have cuddles every now and then. But actually, yeah, I mean, listening to you there and sort of saying, oh gosh, you know, I'm getting a bit emotional talking about that. Previously, before having a dog, I'd have thought, come on, Claire, get it together. But now I completely understand. It's like the bond is so, so strong. It's difficult.
Mm. Well, I think that's the joy about having a pet, which actually kind of seems quite bonkers that you've got this animal living in your home. But we're made for relationships, and we form a relationship with our pet, and they become part of our family. And that doesn't turn our emotions off. If anything, it heightens our emotions. So I think for people that do own pets of whatever type, there is an attachment that forms, and we are very sad when that attachment is broken.
Well, and then Claire, last question for your dog history. And this is a very interesting one. Run us through again. How did it transpire that you run a Dachshund hotel? How did that come about?
Do you know, every time I'm asked this, I still feel totally amazed at how this has evolved. But I was working as an occupational therapist and I was part-time and I really wanted a dog, but my husband was like, nope, don't get it. Haven't been brought up with them. Don't understand them. So we kind of trottled along and I was looking after dogs at weekends for daycare. And someone rang me up and said, Claire, I hear you specialize in Dachshunds, because we'd had a few Dachshunds. And I took a pause and I thought, that is brilliant. And my answer was, yes, I do. So the Little Paws Hotel was born in 2014. We've been looking after Dachshunds only since 2014. And we don't advertise. It's all word of mouth. And the Dachshunds are welcomed into our family home each day or for boarding. And we're allowed up to six because we're vetted by the council. There's a health inspector that comes.
Wow.
My home is checked. I have to have policies and procedures. I have to pay
a
fee.
Can we run through your emergency fire policy, please, with your six Dachshunds?
Yes, you can, because I have to have one. I put them all in the garden, if that's the safest place.
Okay.
Or I get them out and take them to a neighbour's house who has verified that they're happy to be my safety hub.
Very good. Wow. Okay.
I also have to have a flood policy in place as well. Okay. And to assure them that all my fire alarms are working. But why wouldn't they be? Because as a human, I would want my children to get out as well. So
yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah. I'm glad to hear actually that given that it's a Dachshund hotel, there's a flood policy, because with the little legs, I think that would be a worry for them, wouldn't it? They're quite low to the ground. So
we're on a floodplain, so we need to take this seriously, my friend. if you're found boarding or taking money for dogs and you have not informed the council, it's £500 fine or 3 months in prison.
Wow.
Yeah.
Imagine that story in the prison mess. Like, mate, what are you in for? Started an illegal Dachshund hotel. Didn't tell the council. In for 3 months.
Well,
what are you in for?
The council do say that a lot of people do it, which is fair enough. Obviously, everyone tries. That's fine. But they often get told because people make complaints because there's too many dogs or they're worried about the care of them. So I totally understand that it's right to do it this way. You need someone to inspect how you're caring for other people's dogs and that your home is safe and you're doing it properly.
Cool.
The interview's 3 hours.
Wow. Wow.
Okay.
That's
incredible.
I'm sorry. I'm really sorry to labor this point, right? But there was a really funny bit of stand-up that I was watching the other day. And this guy, so he was saying that they wanted to get a rescue dog. And so the people came around and he was like, wow, I did not know what was involved in getting a rescue dog. So they come around and inspect your house and they do an interview with you. So they interviewed him and his wife for like an hour each on all this stuff. And they failed. They said, no, you're not fit to have a rescue dog. And they were like, we have two kids. And they said that we are not fit to look after a rescue dog. How does that work? You know, so I just thought that was quite interesting.
This might be something that we will touch on later, but you can tell a lot about the dog from the owner, and a lot of our own checklists often aren't in place to manage tricky behaviors, even with our own kids. So it's as a person who's running a Dachshund hotel who has to have an interview to make sure the dogs get on, it's right that we kind of meet as owners of Dachshunds ourselves, just to find out how we run our own houses, how their dog might fit in with my routine. I think it is very interesting. It speaks more about our understanding of how to care and how we react that provides for a safe place and space.
Okay, before we go any further, we wanted to ask one big question for this episode, which is, are dogs really a man's best friend? That's the big thing we'd like to bat around, okay? Everyone knows that phrase, but I don't think I've ever at length unpicked that. So if you're up for it, Claire, that's what we're going to
talk about. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that statement is true. So if we look at the type of character, the DNA that the Lord has given, dogs, they're unconditionally loving, they're serving creatures, they are kind, and they are really obedient. And so when they receive love from their owner, they attach themselves to the owner, and they are faithful and loyal. They don't question, they're not moody, they are consistent. And I think that really appeals to us as human beings. It gives us a lot back, and it reassures us that we're needed and we're able to respond to their needs, which gives us a purpose. So I think in terms of a man's best friend, they tick a lot of the boxes. They are a real joy to be around. When you then unpick what is a best friend, I think that's when you can come into sticky waters of idolizing our dogs, depending on them too much, placing our nuances and angst upon them. So the best friend necessarily can't respond to our needs. They might, as dogs, become more dependent on us and kind of spiral into this codependency. So there's a point at which I think it's really healthy and wonderful. And then I think there's a point at which it can become unhealthy, of which some of us as owners can't see is evolving. And we get to a point where we think, oh, the dog's a problem. But more often than not, and it's difficult saying this, it's us. It's the owners.
Wow. And Claire, so that's a really interesting point. Just to follow up on that, owners becoming almost emotionally reliant on their dog. To what extent can dogs really help humans with our emotions, with our emotional well-being, that kind of thing?
I think dogs are absolutely incredible. Thank you, Jesus, for giving us dogs. And the reason I say that is because my dog is a pet therapist, and I go into schools and old people's homes, and I see the response of people who are frightened, anxious, nonverbal, responding to a dog. And I know I've got enough evidence and observations to see that we respond to what a dog can give us in terms of cuddles, empathy, warmth, and compassion. And I think it's just very interesting to be able to work with and alongside a dog to access things that probably when you're face to face with another human, it might be a bit intimidating or it might be a bit overwhelming. The dog doesn't require anything back from you, so you can speak to them and they will just listen. What we think is listening. Obviously, they can't understand us, but they're kind to us. They sit with us and they enjoy us petting them. So I think they are very important. And we're getting more and more evidence and more research to say that this is really worthwhile, this teamwork, this relationship, this friendship of a pet. And we're talking about dogs specifically, but a pet and human contact. We had Tim's granny, who was very frail, 101, bedbound. And I used to take her, my dog Watsit, to visit her. And Watsit's very calm and would sense that Elaine was ill and immobile. And she would just snuggle by her side and lie. And it was like a hot water bottle. And I'd place Elaine's hand on the dog's fur, and I could just see her fingers very gently massaging the dog. When I went to an old people's home, there's this one moment that totally blew me away. A nonverbal resident was sitting there. They had their eyes closed and they were chewing their tongue and they were holding a teddy. And the carers explained that she'd been nonverbal for quite a few years. And I placed Watsit on her, and she opened her eyes in surprise and just said, "Hello, beautiful." And I just thought, how does this happen? How do our brains connect? It was so emotional. I was blown away. How did this woman find the words? How did her brain and her memory of whatever her history had been with a pet or an animal allow her to feel that sense of security? And then just seeing the children, my children, respond to a dog well. You know, they come home from school, the first thing they do is dive into a dog bed and have all six kind of guests all over them. Or I take them into school and the girls, they're not, you know, they don't know each other. They've been picked particularly because they've got special needs at the time. I take in a little jar of carrots, and by the end of the session, everybody's talking, everybody's fed what's a carrot. There's jokes, there's laughter, there's talk about the hotel. It just seems to unite people and give us a sense of focus, which allows for conversations that probably wouldn't happen relationally if you're feeling a bit awkward or unsure. And they're so calming.
So you touched on this before, but do you think dogs are kind of genuinely better at that than other types of pets?
I think it's very interesting when you spend time with a pet, you get to see character, which I think is a really kind of beautiful growth between the human caring for the pet and the pet. And so when you get to know character, I think I'm going specifically with dogs, but we know exactly what it loves. We know what she doesn't like. So when she starts asking us, we're all over it. We love accommodating her. My sister has a bearded dragon, and Sid, he has the most wonderful character, and he will sit on their shoulder, and he likes certain times of the day, and he loves going in the car. So can you imagine? So they take Sid out for a ride because he's just all over the motion. So he puts his paws or claws up on the side of the passenger seat, and this bearded dragon is just staring out the window. It's
next,
brilliant.
You're going to tell us that she runs a bearded dragon hotel.
Well, hang on. She's got a border collie and two guinea pigs. And so Sid, the bearded dragon, sits on top of Max's head and they chill out together. It's too good. It's too good because we know that pets just contribute in such a beautiful way to the well-being of a home.
For our Table Talk Instagram account, we need a photo of...
I can get that to you pretty immediately.
Really? Okay, amazing. Right. Okay, so it's about character. It's about the predictability of that character. And once you know that, then yes, you could use other... pets, yeah. But dogs are generally quite good characters and pretty predictable.
I think because they are unconditional with their love, yeah. And they, you know, cats. I don't get cats. I'm sorry for any cat lovers.
I was literally going to say the C word, and then you just said, why? Go on, tell me.
Oh, gosh, we're about to lose
loads of listeners right now. But
I know, but we're bringing back the love because we are acknowledging that we all love our pets and we have common ground. So stick with us, friends. Okay. But the joy is difference, and I don't get cats.
Because of character. Is it mainly the character for you?
Because I can't understand when they'd want to cuddle and when they wouldn't. I mean, my dog is pleading with me, and I just adore the fact that she's in her little bed under a blanket and I can see an eyeball poking out and she's like, is it now? Is it now? So she's ready for me at any moment. Whereas a cat is independent, in and out. I don't really know when they're around. I just love the fact that it's always there.
Yeah. I also think cats are very high risk. Like if you get that wrong, say if I get it wrong with a dog, right? And they sort of jump up on you a bit and they maybe scratch you with their little paws. You know, yeah, it's going to be annoying, but it's probably going to be all right. Whereas if a cat really goes for it, like you're going to be in bits. I mean, you'll be shredded. But you know what I mean? Like they're unpredictable. If a cat's looking at you, you're like, is it going to come and like lick me and sort of nuzzle in? Or is it going to come and sort of scratch my face or something?
Scratch your eyeball.
Yeah, right. And if it scratches you, you're going to know about it.
The interesting thing that you bring up there is that the pets sense our anxiety. So I have great confidence with dogs. And I'm very able, I think, and I hope after all the experience I've had with them to read dog behavior, but I cannot read cat behavior. And I think they sense that I am unsure of them. And I think that is the same for us as owners. If we're unsure about our dog or there's an aspect of their character that we don't understand well, we can often worsen that. If we're not understanding properly our own boundaries and what they need.
Yeah.
Okay. You said this earlier. I just don't know if I believe this, that dogs give us unconditional love and affection. Like, do they really? Like, isn't it this that we feed them and so they like us?
Yeah. Well, I think the joy about this kind of conditioned learning of them feeding us is that they are happy to obey and they're loyal because they trust us if we're looking after them well and we're caring for them as we should be. Obviously, I'm talking about a family home that adores dogs. When I leave, she knows that I'm coming back through that door and she's always pleased to see me. It's just so rewarding. It's such a joyful friendship.
Okay.
I think that obedience to us.
That is our dogs. A man's best friend. Yes. To be fair, you actually really persuaded me. I was quite skeptical. And now, Graham, you don't need much persuading, but are you persuaded?
I'm persuaded. I think, as you say, unconditional love. I think what you said as well is they come across as very servant-hearted. Like they're very sort of loyal and serving. And I agree with that. And so, yeah, I've got to say, I can't think of another animal that I would say is a better candidate for being best pal.
Right, we're going to move on because I want to dig more into what Claire said up front, which is, okay, so a dog is a man's best friend. A dog is a man's best friend, but are men a dog's best friend? I'm going to flip it around. Like, are we good to dogs? And I'm going to start that with a quote, okay, that I found from an article. See what you guys think about it, okay? This is a quote. Back in the day, dogs were considered hunters and predators. Now they're tiny with bulgy eyes. They can't even jump up on the sofa. They're wearing dresses. They're pushed around in prams. They're vegan. Essentially, we've ruined dogs. We call them our children, and we have given them breathing problems and made them small enough to fit in our handbags. M.A. Wallace puts it, we love dogs because they aren't human. Then we spend our lives treating them like people. We don't really want them to be animals, wild and free and ultimately unknowable. We want them to be like us, but more static and predictable, something we can control.
Wow. So cynical. So,
I know. I'm sorry. I needed to be the cynical person on this call because I was like,
that's fair.
Love dogs. Graham's got a dog. Jack's got to be the cynical one. Okay. Yeah. So, but I want to come back to what Claire said. When do we go from loving dogs to just needing them too much? Because I think that's the insight there, right? It's just we kind of need them too much and then do weird stuff to them. And that's what I wanted to bat around. Claire, you want to speak?
This is a really good kind of meaty discussion that a lot of us will have opinions on. And so I'm very conscious that I'm going to be speaking with my opinion, not as an expert, but just my thoughts.
That's
so
fine.
Holding those responsibly. I think when we look to our dog and change the dynamic and make the relationship very dependent, we're crying out for a sense of brokenness. And we put a lot of emotional intelligence into the relationship with our dog when they don't necessarily hold that intelligence. And so we can put quite a big demand and burden on them for being something that we want them to be. The boundaries become blurred. They become a bit unsure as to how to behave in our house or what's permissible. And it's a fine line. I believe that God lovingly made animals for us to care for. So we're distinctly different from animals, but we are to have authority and care over the animals that God has made. And I think that relationship still needs to be outlived with our dogs. I see that we want to love something so badly that we pour everything into it. My sense is that there's a bit of disorder with that. And because we're kind of rumbling a bit with the disorder of change, the hierarchy in which our good and loving God has created things, that kind of offsets some of the angst that we see with the dogs. We want to create, we want to make different breeds, of which I have one. I hands up, you know, we have a Dachshund that was created with very small paws and it could go flushing out badgers in Germany during the war. So I have a breed that has been genetically modified and I adore her, but I think she's got, well, Dachshunds do have terrible back problems and we kind of play around with breeds now. So we're trying to be the creators of that. And I think that's a difficulty. We long for good relationships that are reliable, that are kind, that are truthful. And our dogs often end up being what we're looking for. And we focus and idolize our dogs. And often by worrying about whether they're going to be left alone or worrying that they're downstairs at night while we're upstairs and encouraging them to be part of our bedtime routine or in our beds, can sometimes lead to codependency, which makes the dog super anxious when it's left because it hasn't been left. And so the care for them ups and you get people now paying to be with their dog whilst they go out. Again, I'm not saying that is a problem for that person if that's what they want, but I'm observing that things are heightening with dogs demanding more time now because I think sometimes we confuse the companionship of our dog and that kind of order, that good order that we've been given versus trying to look at them as equals and what they may or may not need.
Wow.
Yeah. My
so
goodness.
So much in there, Graham.
Lots to unpack. Well, I was also just going to say, I think there's kind of an entire industry that has sprung up around this phenomenon as well, to sort of almost tap into that positioning that dogs now have in our lives. And I was very acutely aware of this. So when we got our little dog Cheddar home, she was 8 weeks old. And one of the things that Antonia was thinking about, so she'd done loads of research on this breed of dogs. And apparently a lot of them, their coat will go lighter, so turn gray as they get older. So she'd done loads of research. She wanted her to stay the same color. And all of this stuff said it's about what you feed them. And it got her onto this dog food. I just bought some sort of kibble for the thing because I was like, well, you know, it needs to eat and that's some food for a dog. And basically this stuff, it's called Butternut Box. And it's, I don't even know how much a month, but it's ludicrously expensive. And this first box of this stuff arrived and it comes frozen. And then you sort of defrost it in your fridge and you give it to the dog. And it suggests, oh, gently warm it up because then your dog will enjoy it. I'm like, what on earth? I looked at the packet. The first packet was slow roast beef with sweet potato and sage and rosemary. And I was like, okay. Pulled out the next packet. It was salmon with vegetables. And also, I was like, this dog is eating better than I am. And I really do feel like there's this sort of, this thing has emerged, as you say, Claire, where I think like the natural position of a dog would be very much that it's an animal, right? Like it's, as you said, Jack, in that quote, it's like a hunter and a protector and it's a wild animal. Now, as you say, we're sort of feeding them human food and we're like, they're sleeping in our beds with us and we're calling them, you know, there's a whole group at work around being a porrent and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, how did we get here? What? You know, and it's like your fur baby and all this sort of stuff. And I, you know, I can understand it because I really love our little dog, but it's so easy to see how you could sort of elevate them above kind of where they should maybe really be.
Yeah. And I think it's important for us to recognize, isn't it, as owners, that probably as an onlooker, I mean, I know people say this about me and what's it, but they're like, why is she under your jumper in your armpit? You know, I mean, for heaven's sake, just watch TV with your dog in your bed. So we will go round in circles, I think, as human beings, with the motive of money, people in the market trying to get our attention and persuade us to look after our dogs differently. So that's ongoing. I think the thing that we just need to be careful of in our own homes and in our own hearts is this dog the center of all my decisions about how I manage my time, where I spend my money, who I now network with? Is it very kind of dog orientated? I'm not saying in any way that we can't have pockets of different people that we're groups of friends with. But when our dog is leading most of our decisions, and it does happen to some of us, we just need to be a bit more aware of that. And sometimes we don't check ourselves. You know, it's okay to have conversations where you're called to just reflect on your own patterns of daily routine since having a dog or what the dog means to you. And I'm not stripping anyone of loving their dog as much as they do. I mean, I can already, sometimes I hold what's it looking at the time that I think you're not going to be here and I can't bear it. I mean, she's just such a member of our family. But my decisions aren't solely based on what's its comfort.
Thanks, Claire. Graham, I want to jump on the back of something. I hadn't heard it. Had you heard the expression, Claire, abhorrent?
And not abhorrent. I haven't. I've heard of fur babies and my porphic life.
Okay, I wanted to read something else. Okay. So there now, did you know there's 13 million dogs in the UK now, which is up 33% versus 2021, on the rise big time. Anyway.
Wow.
So Graham, but what you're saying is true. A recent study found that 44% of millennials do actually see their pets as baby practice. They are the perfect in-between. Dogs are something you can be responsible for without the commitment of a baby. It's achievable parenting and they fit well into our lives of the freelance generation. I thought that's really interesting, Greg, that actually there's also a kind of move to say, I think this is separate to dogs, but that actually a dog is almost like a test of a baby. And that then almost exacerbates some of the problems that Claire said, in the sense that you can then think that it is a baby if you get into that mindset. And I think when you read some of the websites, Bruce's Doggy Daycare here, it's like unleashing happiness. And there's a quote on the side of this van that said, "We wanted Molly to socialize with other dogs and she's made great friends." And I was like, there's this whole, it's like, oh yeah, my dog goes to nursery, like my kid goes, you know, it's just like that sort of language. I think is really interesting. That's kind of crept in as a parent.
I think that taps into the opportunity to have a practice of sharing something together through it being a dog, I think is very popular. And I totally get it. But because of the way that we're evolving at the moment in terms of time and attention, and we're so insular looking at the moment, it's almost a surprise to people how life-changing it is to get a dog, because it is testing the opportunity to serve in a different way. Although it be a dog, and I think sometimes a bit of a distorted way of doing it, you have to put yourself second. And that's why people relate it to parenting, because you've got the responsibility of something. You have to think about managing their time around your own. You have to care for it primarily because you're responsible for it. And that's a big challenge for a lot of people, especially when time is tight and attention is needed.
Absolutely. I totally can see where that quote is coming from, Jack. And actually, I mean, it was a little bit of the conversation that Antonia and I had. It was like, well, we kind of just want to take a step, right? Let's get a dog. And I was like, initially, not really that keen, if I'm completely honest. Delighted now, obviously, but the first 2 weeks were a bit challenging. Mm. And it's like, my goodness. And that was one of the big things, was suddenly your life, you know, it's not really about you anymore. And suddenly you've got this little thing that needs your complete protection and care because it can't look after itself. But then I think that's probably also down to more people thinking, do we want to have kids? Whereas previously that was often just a sort of a bit of a given. I think people are kind of like, well, not sure. I quite like my life. Yeah. Don't know if I really want to bring kids into the picture. Let's test the water with a dog because, you know, that's not as big a commitment. So I don't know. I think it's quite interesting of where our modern society is at amongst the sort of millennial generation.
And also this want to humanize them. So you'll have a lot of people talking about their dogs saying, oh, you know, I can see that she's probably a bit tired now, or I can see that she's frightened. But it's not that complicated. The dog just walked into somewhere new and it's sniffing. So we tend to worry a bit too much, or we're predicting what we think they're going through, but they're uncomplicated and they're just responding to what's in their DNA. I mean, we've domesticated them for friendship, but in the Bible, it's very clear that actually they were used for travel. I mean, Jesus rode on a donkey, carrying bags. They were assistants. They were companions. We have beautiful images of shepherd looking after the sheep. You know, God gives us animals and we're to care for them, but he gives us them in an order. So the creative order is we are to care for them. And I think it's just a call to us as humans to do that in the right way that allows them to be the best they can, but under our loving and careful authority. And pets are wonderful when they understand the boundaries. They are much calmer. They're much more settled. And you tend to find that they can be a bit more neurotic, either because we've crossbred them. Okay, I get that. But maybe if tensions are high in the house, if it's a busy household where the dog doesn't really have any clear place to go and lie, the bed, you know, they're either on the sofa or in a bed. But actually, if they have got a clear space that their bed is there and they're encouraged to go back to the same place, they settle well. Again, I'm only speaking from personal experience. I don't want anyone kind of enraged by what I'm saying.
Oh, you want a bit of enragement, which, now. I think it's really helpful. I don't want to end on a sad note. We'll end on a happy note. But I do think dogs are useful for teaching us about the reality of death as well. I know it's really sad, but I was really struck recently. My brother-in-law got a beautiful black lab, and he's got four young kids. They're all primary school age, and they picked her up and they had the most wonderful year with her, Cassie. And then one morning he came down and found that she had a heart attack, and he raced her to the vets. They tried to resuscitate her, but she died. And he took Cassie and he took his four kids and they went to the woodland and they all buried her. And that is sad. I mean, that is super sad. But we're so bad now at facing the reality of death and the sadness of it that I actually think that's another kindness of God. Death is real and it's sad. And what do we do in the face of that? I think it's just a kind, gentle reminder of, guys, I'm here, I made you. And, you know, like the deepest reality is the sadness of death that looms and the offer of hope beyond that death. I mean, that is the Christian faith, isn't it? And I just thought that was great that my brother-in-law just used that opportunity. Like, it was really sad, but you speak to the kids, and the way he did it gently with them is it was a sad day, but it was a day where they really processed death and they were able to start to get their heads around it. Maybe it was too young. I don't know, Claire. You're very good on this.
I don't think it's too young. I think the biggest problem we have in our Western culture is not talking about death. I mean, the Christian faith death should not be taboo.
No.
And it isn't, because there is great hope in death. But I think we know that it's going to happen to 100% of anything that's living. And so it should be really part of our conversations. And we must try and encourage conversations about what this might look like and how it will feel when we lose a pet, or what death is about when we come together and support each other. And losing a pet is really painful, because what we do again is we go to our human emotions, which we can't help. It's very painful. That physical loss, that physical yearning of a character that's part of your family is hugely painful. But I think talking about it is healthy and helpful. It's okay to say the body stopped working. It's okay not to expect something to go on for eternity physically. But we do know through Christ that he offers us resurrection. And so we can speak about death in a very, very different way. We can acknowledge the sadness. We can acknowledge that not with us. We can do lots of proactive things like talking about good times, stories, photographs, keeping a blanket that reminds us of a pet that we've got. But then we can go beyond that and say, listen, we know that we have hope in a savior who is creator of everything, who has promised to create everything perfectly. And so we hold on to that hope and we say goodbye to our pet and we say, thank you, Jesus, for giving us that life for that period of time in our family. And the conversation can take a very different weight to it and a different steer by holding on to the hope that death is not the end in the bigger picture.
Boom. And maybe we might see dogs in heaven.
I can only speak for what the Bible tells me. And there is a resurrected Lord, and we look to him and he tells us this is what we're promised. So when he tells us that he will create again a new heaven and a new earth, I'm saying to him, come on, Jesus, put my Daxon back in.
Please let Watsick be there.
I mean, I just don't want heaven without a Daxon, let me tell you.
Wow. Right. So, Claire, maybe just to finish off, and thank you, actually, for taking what was definitely, Jack, a really sad story and making it very hopeful. I think that's amazing. But just to end maybe on a sort of, again, a hopeful and positive note, like, I think we've made the case for pets and particularly dogs here. They're brilliant. We love them. They're great. But this podcast is really for, you know, for anyone. But a lot of our listeners are not Christian. And so we've made the case for dogs, but perhaps what's the case for God? Why is knowing God better than knowing a dog and having a pet and that relationship? Give us that case.
Why is knowing God better? Because he is reliable, consistent, and forever, which dogs aren't. I look to God because he is creator, but I look to him because I know that I do life with him. So I'm never alone. Even in my moments when I'm away from my dog, I'm never alone. He is with me. And for that, I am eternally grateful. I can depend on him. I trust him. He knows me and he loves me. And to have that sense of belonging fulfills every part of need, desire, and longing that I look for in any sort of kind of worldly way, whether it be my dog or human relationships. And for that reason, I would always say God first.
Brilliant. Claire, honestly, thank you so much. I must admit, when Jack proposed this as the topic of an episode, I was a little bit unsure of what to expect. But as usual, Claire, you have just, like, it was absolutely fascinating. I mean, I've never heard someone talk so deeply and passionately about the relationships that dogs have and what that tells us about God. I mean, absolutely brilliant. So thank you, Claire, for joining us. A true friend of the show.
True friend.
Oh, well,
I'm sorry if I was a bit skeptical, but I feel won over.
Well, you know what's got to be a follow-up, don't you, boys? Got to come and visit the Daxon Hotel.
I thought that. Can we?
Of course you can. Get yourselves here.
Yes.
So keen. And to be clear, Claire, would another breed of dog be allowed a visit, or is that just completely off limits?
So now that is an interesting last question. I did have a recent inquiry on Monday and they said they are a very small dog and I promise they'll get on with Daxons, but it's not a Daxon. Would you allow her in? And I said, well, I do love all dogs, but I have to respect that I am breed specific and I need to respect that the owners are coming here because it's breed specific. And so to not show favoritism, I'm going to stick to my word and be a true and loyal dog hotelier.
Well done. I would have been disappointed had you gone any other way. I will let Jenna down very gently. Claire said no.
Sorry, Graham.
It's official. Okay.
Graham, you can start a golden doodle hotel.
A miniature golden doodle hotel. We'll give that
good
some
luck
thought.
To you.
Yeah, exactly. That niche hotel.
Thanks, Claire.
Okay.
Over now.